Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so I want to share something that I think is really important, and it's this idea of taking creative risks. And by the way, I just want to say glad to be back. I've taken a couple weeks off because of vacation and hung out with my family in Phoenix. And that was really fun. Like, we all did the whole family on an airplane thing, which was oddly easier than it could have been. So that was kind of fun. And got a chance to be where it was, you know, 78 and sunny and not a bad thing. But I want to talk about this idea of taking creative risks. And I think it's important because I think that too often fear is the thing that gets in the way of innovation for teachers. And so I just want to share, you know, some ideas for what it would look like to take creative risks. So my daughter looks up from her cereal and she says, "You know what day I can't wait for? Your birthday." I'm thinking, it's not until October, but come on. And she shakes her head. "Next Christmas?" I ask. She shakes her head again. And then she says, "The first day back to school. I can't wait to see my friends and my teacher. I don't know what projects we're going to do, but I know it's going to be awesome." And she's right. It will be awesome. Because her teacher is always trying new projects. She's always taking creative risks, and my daughter is always excited to go to school as a result. It has me thinking about this brilliant blog post from last year, one that I no doubt am totally stealing from. But I love this. It was a blog post from last year imploring teachers to use the new year as a reboot to take new creative risks. And so with that in mind, I'm going to share a few of my own thoughts on creative risks that teachers can take with the start of a new year. So in less than a week, I'm going to get to work with a new cohort of pre-service teachers. They will have wild ideas that they want to try out, crazy concepts of epic projects that put students in the driver's seat. But over time, many of them will learn to push those ideas aside. They'll be in these, you know, placements with cooperating teachers where they have like a scripted curriculum and a lot of pressure and the tests and all that kind of stuff. And because of that, they're going to worry that their ideas won't work. What about the classroom management? What about the parents? What will administrators think? You get the idea. And so they'll say things like this: "Once I'm established, I can innovate. But for now, I need to work on my classroom management." Or, "I'll think about transforming practice after I've had a few more years under my belt." And then the years will go by, and they'll wait for permission that never comes until eventually those ideas seem like a distant memory, a relic of an idealistic new teacher. But then there will be other new teachers who aren't afraid to play the new teacher card. They'll take these wild ideas and turn them into a reality. True, there are going to be bumps and bruises and skin knees along the way, but they'll dust themselves off, they'll get back up, and they'll try again, pushing through iterations and iterations until at some point they have something awesome. But the fear will never go away. Not completely. Because truth be told, innovation is scary. It's why so few people do it. And yet when I observe classrooms where students are becoming problem solvers and creative thinkers, there is always a common element. And it's the teacher. They take risks. They experiment. They realize that failure is permanent, but failing is part of the learning process. They know that creative risk-taking is exactly that, a risk. It might work, it might fail, but they also know that the greatest risk occurs when you teach out of fear, when you fail to innovate, and when you hide those great ideas because you're afraid it won't work out. So with that in mind, I want to explore some of the ways that we as educators can take risks with students. Many of these ideas are things that I attempted with students, but some of these are ones that come from other people. I've been talking to a bunch of my teacher friends, and so I want you to know that these are all teacher tested, either from my classroom or from some of the really cool teachers that I know. Okay, so here they are. Number one, student blogging. Thematic blogs are these blogs that are based on student interests and passions and ideas. You might have students doing foodie blogs or sports blogs, fashion blogs, science blogs, history blogs, bug blogs, gamer blogs. You get the idea. They choose the topic, they choose the audience, and it's a great way for students to practice writing in different genres, right? So persuasive, functional, informational, expository, narrative, with specific blog topics that they choose. They can add multimedia components like slideshows and pictures, videos, audio. What I love is it's a chance to reinforce and spiral back to other things that they've learned in language arts. And so if you think about the blogs that you read outside of school, they are nothing like school. People write foodie blogs and they're about food, right? They don't seem like an assignment. So the goal of this is to have something that is less like an assignment and more like, well, the types of blogs that people actually read. Now, if you don't have the best technology in your classroom, but you have a projector and an interactive whiteboard, there's also something called visual writing prompts, and I've done a lot of these. I have a whole pack that you can download, also the free student blogging toolkit. Again, if you look at this particular blog post, spencerauthor.com/creative-risks, then you'll see there's all of these different things available to download. So I'll reference some of them, and if any of them interest you, you can check them out. Number two is a Wonder Day or Wonder Week. This is a fun, easy way to get students engaged in nonfiction reading. They basically answer a driving question that they are dying to find out. So if they start out with, I'm wondering why, I'm wondering what, I'm wondering what would happen, how, if, whatever. But they start with, I'm wondering blank. And then from there, they start coming up with questions. Eventually, they narrow down their one single question, and they just go through the research process. It's a simple idea. It's not super complex, but if you have one-to-one devices, this is an easy way to provide student ownership and to model creative risk-taking because you're telling them, I'm going to let you own the learning today. Number three, give sketchnoting a chance. I find it sad that so many students start out loving to draw, but as they get older, they grow more insecure. Suddenly, sketching something out is something that only, quote, real artists do. And this is why I love sketchnoting. It doesn't have to be pretty. You can use stick figures and doodles, and it doesn't matter. So check it out. There's a great link on the blog post to a resource by Kathy Schrock. She's kind of a legend in edtech circles. But check it out. It's really cool. Sketchnoting. And if you sketchnote, you are actually modeling the process for your students as well. And I think that's kind of cool to give them a chance to see that even though you don't believe that you are an artist, you're actually, you know, modeling the process for them, and they get to see it. And that to me is really cool when they get that opportunity to check it out. So that is number three. Number four is launch a design thinking project. And I know I just said launch because that's the framework that AJ Julian and I came up with, but you know, choose one design thinking project to do for the entire year. And it can be 2 weeks long, 4 weeks long. I wouldn't do much less than 2 weeks if you're really going to do design thinking well. And the key idea is that you're taking a big creative risk because it's outside of your comfort zone. It's totally different for you. But in the process, it's also something different for students. They have to own the entire process. They have to ask their own questions, do their own research. They go through the ideation process on their own. They eventually send it to an authentic audience, and that is itself pretty risky. And it's really cool to see what happens as they gain confidence through this creative risk-taking. All right, so number five is carve out time for a genius hour. I used to call our genius hour projects geek out projects. They were really similar to the thematic blogs that I mentioned. I do have a video for genius hour. You can check it out. And there's the teacher sided one, and there's the one that you can play for students as well. But Genius Hour basically is 20% time, and it started with Google. They give people 20% of their work time to work on their own kind of passion projects. And so 20% time, Genius Hour, it's the idea that you are carving out that time for students to have independent projects on their own interests. And these can align to the standards. So it's not like you're having to replace the curriculum or add something to your plate. It's really more about finding those sort of content or topic neutral standards and building a Genius Hour project around that. Number six is a divergent thinking mini project. And this is where you give students a box. We used to call them MacGyver projects. I wish I'd like worn a mullet. That would have been so awesome. But we would call them, you know, like I said, MacGyver projects. And you give students a set of a box of supplies, and random objects are inside of there. And then they have to go through a divergent thinking exercise where they come up with as many different uses for those objects as possible. And then they have to make something with it. And the goal is to see which group can come up with the best one. And I think it's really fun to see like what they can do in 45 minutes or what they can do in 90 minutes. Number seven is to have students create sketch videos. And there's four different levels. The easiest one is the flipbook videos. And then you kind of move into more difficult with like stop motion ones where they're physically moving objects around. That's still pretty easy. You can get into whiteboard videos, which is sort of like those online whiteboard videos if you've seen like the RSA Animate style. And then you can do full-fledged animated videos. And I would start out with level one, honestly. And again, it's a chance to model creative risk-taking. Number eight, do a Maker Monday. A Maker Monday begins with a simple premise. Spend the first part of a day engaged in hands-on creative work. It might seem small, but it slowly leads to a maker mindset where students learn to think like designers, engineers, architects, artists, and problem solvers. A Maker Monday could have maker centers where students do something like scratch projects or cardboard prototyping, circuitry, multimedia. But it also works to have the entire class doing kind of one maker challenge together. And I love the ones that are like cardboard and duct tape. I think simple non-tech supplies work really, really well here. But you could do the whole thing with like a 3D printing and all that kind of stuff as well. That's totally fine. And it works well if you give them kind of a challenge. Like I have one that's a design a drone delivery system. And if you have a drone, it's pretty cool to test it. But they basically have to create a landing solution for a company that's doing drone delivery mail. And so it's kind of a fun way to give them that challenge and see what they do with it. Number nine is create Scratch video games together. We've been super, super into this in our house. And I want you to think back to your childhood. If you're like me, if you're a child of the 80s or older, you probably would have loved to like create your own Frogger or Duck Hunt or Super Mario or Centipede or any of that, right? It would have been totally epic. And that's the concept behind Scratch. I just introduced Scratch to my own kids. My daughter got really into creating variations of Pong. My middle son has started making his own visuals and designing more in-depth video games. And it is so stinking fun. We're really into it. And so you can actually start out with Scratch. I would encourage you to do this. Make your own game. Do the Pong game on your own. Do it by yourself, spend an hour doing it, just learn it yourself, and then think about how you would teach that to students. And then start with the very simple Scratch game, like the Pong game, something like that. And then you can move into doing iterations, hacking games, and move away from the recipe and into the true creativity. And the final one is to Skype with an author. And Skyping with an author is something I never did as a classroom teacher, but it's something that I love. We did this with Wendell, the World's Worst Wizard. It was really fun. I co-wrote the book with my wife, and I loved doing author Skypes. I loved getting the chance to talk with people. And so that's kind of a creative project that you could model. And so that's the idea. Some of these creative risks, I mean, these are all instructional things, but I have a final thought that I want to share. And it's that some of the biggest creative risks you can take have nothing to do with an epic new project. These are the deeply relational things that you do as a teacher that model risk taking. And they're small things, but they're a big, big thing in the end, right? One is apologize. I know this doesn't feel like it has anything to do with creativity, but it's what allows people to feel safe and to make mistakes. It helps create a classroom culture where people are open about their faults and willing to grow. In other words, it's your chance as a teacher to model a growth mindset. And so I would say this, apologize often to your students. Number two, ask students to evaluate you. Create student surveys that elicit feedback and then share those results with your students along with what you will be doing in order to refine your instruction. Another thing you can do is share your journey. Tell students what you're doing on your own personal genius hour. Let them see your passion and your interest in creativity. And finally, share your epic fails along the way. Let them know that making mistakes is a part of the learning process, and it is a part of what of how you do creative work. Ultimately, the most powerful creative element in your classroom is you. You have the power to inspire students to take creative risks by modeling the process and being open and even vulnerable about your journey. But it also happens when you design creative projects that encourage students to take their own creative risks. So I would encourage you to choose one of these things. And in 2018, go out and do something different. Take a big creative risk. So thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this, would you leave a review on iTunes? That would mean the world to me. Have an awesome, wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.